to Down the Dunk Podcast.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk Podcast. This is Andrew Schlecht, and I'm here with John Hamm. We need somebody who's super smart, knows a lot about the CBA and the cap, to kind of help us digest this new TV deal. Because, John, honestly, the only thing that I hear when I see all that money is lockout. Can you talk me out of that?
I want to. I really do. I've thought a lot about this, and I've read some takes back and forth. And I'm thinking, too, about several years ago, Major League Baseball was headed that direction. I remember there was one season that everyone thought there was going to be a strike, there was going to be a lockout, purely based on the history, and they averted it. So, you know, even though we had a very contentious 2011 lockout, and there was a very contentious 99 lockout, you know, the 05 agreement came together pretty easily, pretty quickly. So in 2011, the owners, they wanted to recoup, you know, they claimed they were losing as a league $300 million per year. They claimed the financial model was broken. They wanted to rein in long-term contracts and several other things. So they had a number of things they wanted to go after. When we get to 2017, obviously they can't make those claims anymore. No. That, you know, we're flat broke and we need you to give us more money. So hopefully the owners are going to be more willing to kind of meet the players in the middle. The thing that I'm concerned about is, you know, they can probably meet in the middle as far as the how they split the revenue. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering about structural things like the collective bargaining agreement, like player freedom. Yep. Basically, are players going to want to eliminate maximum salaries? Are they going to want to significantly relax some of these salary cap restrictions that have been put in? You know, are they willing to, you know, go to battle for that?
Mm-hmm. I feel like this year, or not this year, in 2017, the lockout may be from the player's side more than the owner's side, because Vivek Ranadive bought the Kings for like $500 million. And now that team's going to be worth at least twice that.
Yeah.
Like he made over half a billion dollars, basically.
Right. And in the same thing with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, and the Bucks.
Yeah.
Like those guys made, they're going to make probably close to $1 billion on their teams. And the players are going to sit there like, like Durant's like, I'm making what? And you yes. are getting this much? Like, no. Like, you need to, like, this is not fair. So it's right. gonna, I feel like it's going to come from the other side. And I know, like, the last lockout, the owners took like 6% of the players' BRI. And I know they weren't happy about that. And I think the outcome, if there is a lockout, is going to swing in favor of the players just because of how much money these guys are making. Like it's insane. In the Clippers deal right now, that doesn't look so crazy anymore.
Right. Yeah, especially because of the location of the team. And again, the circumstances surrounding that sale inflated it, you know, somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah. And I just go back and to 2007 and Howard Schultz sold the Sonics and the Storm for $350 million. And again, there was this dude living in the Seattle area, kind of rich. I think he just bought the Clippers. He could have bought the team at that time and built a new stadium in Seattle with his own money for less than $2 billion. So
he could have been screaming on the mic a lot earlier than just this past year.
Running around with flop sweat. Yeah. Years earlier. It's great.
As a Thunder fan, the things that we are concerned about at this very moment in time, the one most immediate is Reggie Jackson's contract and then obviously Durant's contract. How does this new deal impact Reggie Jackson's deal coming up here? It's really probably going to come up next summer because I really don't expect anything to be done this month. What is that going to look like, and how does this deal impact that?
Yeah, so a little bit of backstory here. There's there's a tidal wave of money coming in. That's the best way I know how to explain it. Mm-hmm. So just to kind of set the stage a little bit, you mentioned before basketball-related income. There are a number of things that the league defines as basketball-related income. A huge component of that is the television contract, the national TV contract. So obviously that's getting ready to it's going to double in 2016, and then it's going to increase, you know, little by little after that over the life of the contract. So we're looking potentially at a 1 year jump of the salary cap increasing, you know, $16 million. Now there's other things like the luxury tax is tied, you know, to BRI, maximum salaries are tied, you know, to BRI. So as that number increases, that obviously increases, you know, all these other things as well, and creates sort of like an inflation sort of effect. So there is some talk. Larry Kuhn wrote an article for ESPN where he laid out where they're aware of where a 1 year huge jump could be problematic, and they're looking to kind of smooth that out potentially. So it's a little difficult to forecast at this point because we don't really know how they're going to implement this tidal wave of money coming in. So if they leave things alone and just let the salary cap jump by $14 to $15 million, Kevin Durant's next contract could start at around $28 million as opposed to maybe 23.5. Yeah, great benefit to him. If they kind of limit that and phase that in over a number of years, then his maximum salary will still be, you know, in the 23+ range, but it will be, you know, a little more sensible than that. So there are still some unknowns until the owners and the players negotiate how they're going to manage, you know, this money coming in. So, and as far as Reggie Jackson goes, I don't know that this impacts him a whole lot. And the reason I say that is he's still going to be kind of, he's still subject to just market demand. There's a lot of point guards in the league. And I look around the league and there's teams that, yeah, maybe Reggie would be an improvement for the team, but they've got a young guy in place that maybe Reggie doesn't make sense for them. So I don't know that he's got a lot of landing spots, and I don't know that there are and a lot of teams that would fork over, say, a maximum salary contract to them, because they're going to be mindful of their 2016 space, especially if there's a tidal wave of money coming in. So, yeah, it's fascinating.
That's was kind of what I see too. Is that are the Lakers really wanting to give away, you know, $16 million to Reggie Jackson, and then have what would they have left in 2016 when they want to go after Durant or
right.
Whoever else. I think that a lot of money is going to be thrown at guys like Mark Gasol and Rajon Rondo, guys that, you know, like these are top level guys. They have done it in the playoffs. They've done it on multiple stages. We know what they can do. Reggie Jackson still, there's a lot of question marks with him. You know, the Memphis series, Beno Udrih outplayed him. Like, we think of just that one game that he won for right. the Thunder, which was great. But overall, Beno, who is one of the furthest guys away from a maximum contract, outplayed him.
right.
And obviously, he has the potential to be much better than he played in that series, and I realize that. But he's still not that consistent contributor, that a guy that you can say, you know, we're going to give him a max contract, and he's going to start for us, and we know exactly what he's going to give us. Even guys like Gordon Hayward and Chandler Parsons, those guys have contributed at a higher level than he has. So he has a lot of proving to do this year.
Yeah, and you mentioned guys like Hayward and Chandler Parsons. Again, those are swing position players, which are the guys that are in demand right now.
Exactly.
So you're right about Reggie. You know, if he has a James Harden sixth man of the year type season for the Thunder this year, that could obviously change things a lot. Mm-hmm. But you look at his stats from last year, and again, I'm not dogging Reggie as a basketball player. He's very good. He's very, very good. His stats were helped obviously last season because Russell Westbrook missed half the season, and Russell Westbrook was limited to roughly 30 minutes a game for a large chunk of the season. So his stats were somewhat inflated by that. Give him a full season as kind of the fourth option, you know, I don't know quite how that's going to boil out. So, yeah, it's not as cut and dried as some people think, that, you know, that he's just going to go out and get a max contract next season, because I'm struggling to come up with a scenario where that might happen.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I think all of it boils down to what you mentioned first, is that just he's a point guard, and he wants to play point guard. He doesn't want to play off the ball. He wants to lead a team. And yeah, there are tons of guys that do that. Like, I can think of just a few teams that are going to need a point guard. You know, the Knicks probably are going to want a different point guard than Jose Calderon going forward. The Lakers probably need another point guard. I don't know that the Pacers or the Pistons probably would like to get, like, upgrade those positions a little bit from Jennings and George Hill. But beyond that, everybody has a guy, either a guy that's already established or a young guy that they are going to kind of invest in, like Orlando. So it's going to be, I really think that the outcome, in my opinion, is going to be that Reggie Jackson is going to re-sign with the Thunder at a reasonable clip. I really think that's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I think so too. The biggest question is going to be, can he accept the role that he's going to play here in Oklahoma City, which is in all likelihood coming off the bench? And that's the role that makes sense for him, and that's the role that they need filled here. So if he can accept that, and, you know, we've heard it all summer with him talking about wanting to be one of the greats, and, you know, I don't know if this is him actually believing that, or if that, like, he has to keep telling himself that in order to keep pushing himself. Maybe I need to try that in my professional career. Like, I'm the greatest network administrator ever. And, you know, maybe if I give that a shot, things will, you know, turn around. I don't know.
Yeah. But I like the attitude that he has. I read the Darnell Mayberry article, which was good. But it made me think, like, wow, he is not going to play for the Thunder very much longer. We were fortunate enough to be able to go to media day, and I got to see him in person and hear him talk about his contract situation. And it just made me think, like, this guy just wants to be the best basketball player. And he said that he can be content playing for the Thunder. And I really think that if the Thunder can win the title this year, I think it changes everything.
Absolutely could.
For the Reggie Jackson situation. That he could be like, wow, like, look at this core that we have. Let's keep this together. And, I mean, his path to greatness, and he's got to realize this, is probably better suited to win multiple championships with the Thunder rather than lead a Lakers team that is going God knows where.
Yeah, 36 and, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I feel for him, because I think it's very difficult to bring in a young guy who's clearly talented, like James Harden, like Reggie Jackson, and tell them, no, we need you to come off the bench, especially because they're thinking about not only their personal achievements, you know, that they want to be considered for an all-star, they want to be considered for all NBA or what have you. They also want to make as much money as they possibly can. And generally that happens by being in the starting lineup and doing that. When you go back and look at, you know, some of the most recent, you know, sixth men that we think of that are so wonderful, when you think of Jamal Crawford or Jason Terry or Lamar Odom, well, these guys all were starters at one point in their careers, got the big contracts, and then wound up in a situation where it made sense for them to come off the bench.
Yeah.
Later in their careers. You know, Manu is kind of an outlier as far as that goes. So, yeah, I feel for Reggie. I kind of see where he's coming from. But, yeah, you don't want to be subject to the Peter principle, where you rise above the level of your competency as well. Sometimes you just got to find your spot and excel at that area.
Yeah, maybe we need to get Jamal Crawford and Lamar Odom and those guys in a room and just say, Jamal, how did you enjoy your time in Chicago?
Right, exactly.
How was that?
Yes. Yeah.
Lamar, when you played for the Clippers, did you like it better or worse than when you played for the Lakers? Tell me yeah. Tell me how that went.
Yeah, like, let me see your rings again, Lamar. What do those look like? Okay, cool.
Do you like winning 60 games a year, Jamal? Or do you like, you know, scoring 20 a game and being right on a miserable Chicago team? And some guys, a lot of guys go through that. I mean, Jason Terry, who had a miserable time in Atlanta, I think they were the worst team in the league 1 year that he was their starting point guard. So it's, yeah, it's.
And then Jason Terry was the starting point guard on the 06 finals team with the Mavericks.
Yep.
And, you know, then they, you know, Devin Harris kind of emerged and they traded for Jason Kidd. And then he naturally found this spot off the bench where he excelled and he embraced it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's difficult. But again, he got paid first. That helps matters a lot, too. If you're secure, if you've got the big contract, I think these guys become a little more accepting of things once they've got the big contract.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of big contracts, you mentioned earlier the idea of doing away with maximum contracts and basically saying, pay the player what they're worth. So tell me the kind of complications that will arise if this comes to fruition.
Yeah, so Mark Cuban talked about this, and he was putting it out there. Again, with anything in the collective bargaining agreement, everything is subject to negotiation. I will give up this right if you give up this right. So, you know, basically Cuban is saying we should probably get away with maximum salaries if the players agree to do away with a lot of the contract guarantees that they currently enjoy. So they're kind of floating that out there. Maximum salary contracts were put into place back in the 99 agreement. And that's because like every summer was becoming a game of can you top this? You know, there was big contract after big contract. You know, Shaq and Juwan Howard, mm-hmm. you know, were signing competing $100 million deals. Penny Hardaway, Kobe Bryant were coming up. Kevin Garnett had just signed that, you know, 6-year, $125 million extension, which seemed a little ludicrous at the time and turned out wasn't ludicrous at all. So this was kind of a way of you know, reining in what they thought was going to be just something that was going to spiral out of control. And also, I mean, it does help. The Lakers could fork out, you know, $50 to $60 to $70 million on a superstar without breaking a sweat and put the rest of the team together just fine. It would be a struggle for some teams like New Orleans or Charlotte or Memphis or Oklahoma City to do the same sort of thing. So in order to kind of level the playing field for the superstars, that's why that was put into place. I don't know that it's going away. It's interesting because the league, it seems, has kind of stepped in to help that situation because there are a few guys that we talk about. When we talk about getting rid of maximum contracts, we're talking about benefiting Kevin Durant, LeBron James, probably mm-hmm. Blake Griffin, Anthony Davis, some of these guys that sell the league. And so what the NBA has kind of done is went to their partners and have lined up lucrative deals. So you got Kevin Durant with Sprint. You've got Chris Paul with State Farm. You've got Blake Griffin with Kia. And they've kind of put together those sort of packages to kind of help compensate some of these superstars that should be getting more than what they're making. So they're kind of addressing it a different way for the guys that really deserve more than max. And I kind of think they want to leave. I think the owners would like to leave that alone, and I think the players in the end would probably relent on that as well, especially if they just increase it a little bit.
Yeah, and it seems like it would just destroy like the middle-class contracts, like those $10 million contracts could go away for teams that have superstars because you just can't afford to fit them in there with all the other guys. So everybody else is going to, like, Durant will make his $50 million or whatever it's going to be, and you can obviously justify it, but then, like, how do you keep a team of Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and Serge Ibaka together if there's, you know, no limit? I don't know.
Yeah, and then you've got some team out there that horribly mismanages itself every year that's like, yeah, I like that idea. I want to get one of those guys because I don't know what the heck I'm doing. Yeah. So they've all kind of got their own. Every team's got their own agenda to a certain point, but and you know, it's interesting too. You mentioned that sort of middle class of player, the NBA or the players anyway, have always wanted to try to protect that as much as possible, because when you're constructing a team, obviously, you know, you can't just have one superstar and 10 minimum guys. You've got to have a well-rounded basketball team, and you've got to take care of the middle class. And you could make a equivalent statement about society in general if you wanted to.
Sure.
So they've been protective of that. And so I mentioned earlier about this tidal wave of money coming in. For example, we have the mid-level exception, which is typically about, you know, it's a contract where you can sign a guy for, you know, roughly the league average salary. That is set in stone in the agreement. Each year it says, you know, in this season, the mid-level exception is worth this amount. It's not tied to basketball-related income. So suddenly, if the maximum salaries jump up, you know, even higher than what they are, you know, gosh, someone made a comment about Hashim Thabeet making $7 million on a minimum salary contract. I mean, that seems about right. that mid-level exception is going to, you could get a really, you know, probably good player signing for that amount. So, yeah, there's some complications if they just let that salary cap just swell at one point, and that's one of the reasons why.
Well, hopefully they will smooth it out some, because it could, I don't know. I would rather there just be a lot of coverage of people shooting and dribbling basketballs rather than, like, talking about caps moving and stuff like that. So I'd like for them, or the cap jumping up and, like, all these teams going to get, you know, whoever, and overpaying, you know, this guy, and DeAndre Jordan's making $28 million a year. Like, I'd rather not see that happen.
Because the other complication, you know, the teams have to spend a minimum of 90% of the salary cap. And so suddenly there are some teams that could wind up having to spend $14 million more than they really need to or expected to. And so, yeah, you could have, you know, some guys that just luck into money, kind of like Keith Bogans did last season with the Celtics. Yeah, you could have that complication. And as far as, like, Oklahoma City is concerned, retaining Kevin Durant is going to be difficult enough as it is. I mean, it's just most superstars that go into free agency are going to go entertain playing somewhere else. That's just a natural part of the process. So we know that's inevitable. But if the salary cap happens to jump up in that particular season, and now, you know, that could really, some destinations that you kind of thought, yeah, maybe could become a lot more attractive, like Houston. Suddenly, if they could say, yeah, Kevin, we can sign you and we can bring in maybe not all-star number four, but, you know, super very talented player number four in addition to you to add to the current core. Or if the Lakers could come in and say, well, yeah, we can sign you and two other, you know, all-stars this summer, that would definitely throw a monkey wrench into things.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about Thunder. They have a preseason game tonight against the Nuggets, and
they do,
which is pretty cool. The thing that's not so cool is that I won't be able to watch it on my TV. I don't know. Is there going to be a illegal stream somewhere that I can find to watch this game?
I keep hearing about these things. Anthony Slater keeps alluding to such a thing. So it may very well be out there somewhere. And if you can't get a live stream, it may very well be available for download somewhere in the you know, sewers of the internet on the next day. So
the power forward spot is going to be interesting tonight because both Serge Ibaka and Nick Collison are not playing. Who do you think is going to start? Is it going to be Perry Jones or is it going to be Mitch McGarry?
My hunch is Perry Jones. But then again, I think last season during the preseason, Kendrick Perkins got injured and Steven Adams stepped right in and started playing. Now, clearly, you know, they saw something in Steven Adams and that became a season long thing. So, I think it would be Perry Jones, but if he trotted out Mitch McGarry instead, that wouldn't floor. It would tell me something. Yeah. Like, wow, they're seeing something kind of special in this kid. So, yeah.
What do you expect from Mitch McGarry? Let's just talk about preseason. What do you expect from him in preseason? And do you see him carving out a role potentially in the regular season?
In the preseason, I kind of expect he's going to be playing at an energy level way above everyone else that's just trying to round into shape at this point. I think he's going to out-hustle, kind of out-energy guys. And, I think he's going to carve out kind of a niche for himself. I don't think he'll be in the rotation, like starting opening night necessarily, especially if you kind of go back and look at Brooks's history. You know, there was one season where Eton Thomas was the backup center, and then Serge Ibaka eventually kind of took that role from him, and Eric Maynard kind of gave way to Reggie Jackson at a certain point. So I kind of think they'll ease him in, but I if what I'm seeing and hearing about this guy is legit, I think they're going to have a very difficult time keeping him out of the rotation. So my guess has been that by Christmas time, he would probably be a rotation piece going forward. And, you know, by the end of the season, be one of the core guys off the bench as we roll into the playoffs.
Whose minutes is he going to take?
I think over time, it's going to be Collison and Perkins that give way. Mm-hmm. Collison and Perkins could start the season in the rotation, and you know that could taper off as the season evolves. But yeah, over time, again, if what I'm seeing and hearing is kind of accurate, I still haven't seen any of the summer league play that I keep hearing about. But yeah, I'm having a lot of Steven Adams flashbacks. Yeah. So, and that's why I think it's possible that he could very well become part of the rotation, you know, pretty quickly.
Yeah. And the other massive question mark is the shooting guard position. And I thought all along it's going to be Andre Roberson, and I still think that today. I don't know if... I mean, it's so hard to say, like, if Roberson starts tonight, he'll be starter, you know, opening night. But who do you think that it's Roberson? Or and if not, who do you think that it's going to be?
Yeah, it seems to be trending Roberson's direction. I've been on the Jeremy Lamb bandwagon. I still hold out hope. I still think the guy is very talented, and I still think he has to earn it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like Lamb deserves a shot at that. Everything seems to be trending towards Andre Roberson taking that position. And you're right. Whatever happens tonight is not necessarily indicative of what's going to happen going forward. I remember in the preseason last year, Jeremy Lamb actually started a game and Tavo came off the bench. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for rest reasons or, you know, whatever Brooks had in mind. So, however, that being said, all indications are pointing towards Roberson getting that role. And I'm kind of accepting it. So, you know, last season when Roberson started, it was in the middle of the season whenever, you know, Tabo was injured, and it was basically, hey, go out and be Tabo. Mm-hmm. And clearly he doesn't have the skill set that Tabo had at the time with the pump fakes and the missing layups and stuff like that. So, but yeah, so he was kind of basically told to do that. But if you have a summer and you have a training camp where you can kind of redesign the offense and say, okay, here's Roberson's strengths, or, you know, cutting to the basket, or, you know, getting in and trying to get some rebounds, or not necessarily go park at the 3-point line and wait for the ball to come your way. Yep. He could become really effective given time to, you know, design something to make him effective.
Yeah. I think he's going to be good. I mean, he's got that motor. He has the trust of his teammates. And he's going to play really great defense. I'm kind of excited for him. I'm excited to see more of him and what he did over the summer, because usually young guys that play for the Thunder improve over the summer and come back with something new. So I'm excited to watch him play.
Yeah, and I'm not expecting that he's Bruce Bowen as mm-hmm. far as, you know, 38% from three and, you know, and that world-class defender. Again, I kind of think that the offense is going to be tweaked out to where maybe, you know, they're going to try to get Ibaka or whoever's playing the four more opportunities at the 3-point line, maybe more so than Roberson. Mm-hmm. That's just my hunch. We'll see what Brooks has cooked up over the summer.
Well, John, thanks for coming on the podcast today. Tell us your Twitter handle so people can follow you.
Sure. My Twitter handle is John. It's J-O-N M Ham. So John M Ham. And so, yeah, follow me along through there. And occasionally I talk basketball. A lot of times I talk basketball. A lot of times I post silly things. But, yeah, just season's coming up. I'm anxious for it to get going.
John's a great follow. He one of the smarter guys talking basketball online. So you really need to follow him. Thanks for listening to the Down and Dunk podcast. You can always follow us at DTV Podcast. You can find our stuff at welcometoloudcity.com as well as downtodunk.com. Thanks for listening.